WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's Jazz Week on Fresh Air. We're featuring interviews with musicians and singers who have made significant contributions to the development of jazz. Saxophonist James Moody first became known for his 1949 recording of I'm in the Mood for Love. His reworking of the melody was so good, it became the melody of a new song with a lyric by Eddie Jefferson called Moody's Mood for Love. Here's Moody's 1949 recording. James Moody began his career in 1947 in the early days of bebop, playing with Dizzy Gillespie's big band. By the end of the 40s, he'd left the band and moved to Europe. Moody returned to the States in the early 50s to lead his own band. He played with Gillespie again during much of the 60s, but in the 70s, Moody left the jazz scene to work a steady job in a Vegas hotel band. When he returned to the jazz world, critic Gary Giddens wrote that there are few living musicians he enjoys hearing in performance more than Moody. I spoke with Moody in 1996 after the release of his recording of songs associated with Frank Sinatra. Here's Moody singing on the title track, Young at Heart.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you. If you're young at heart, doo-dee-bee-bee-dee-bo-doo-doo-dee-bee, for it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind. If you're young at heart, biddy biddy little boat and dip, you can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams, and life gets more exciting with each passing day, and love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart.
James Moody, welcome to Fresh Air. And I want to say that I think this new album is delightful, and it's really delightful to hear you sing and to sing a song that's not a novelty song. Are you singing more now?
Well, maybe this might be the beginning of something. You know, maybe, who knows? You know, when you have strings like that, it makes you think you can sing, you know.
What do you think of your voice?
Well, it's a funny thing is I'm not as concerned with my voice as I am with my lisp that I have, you know, because I'm partially deaf. And I was born that way, and it doesn't mean that I have a speech impediment. It's just that I don't hear S's. So, because my wife always tell me when I'm singing Mood for Love, I'd say, you give me a smile, and it says, it sounds like you're saying you give me a mile when I'm wrapped up in your magic, you know, in the lyrics. So anyway, that, you know, but I guess at this stage of the game, I just say what I say and hope that it comes out.
Well, has that held you back from singing? Are you self-conscious about that lisp?
No, really not at all, because I say what I say. I've been doing it for 71 years of talking. So if I say, you know, fairy tales can come true, you know, I don't know, too, you know, it can happen to you if you're young at heart. Doodle-dee-dee-doo-doo-doo-wee-dee.
Oh, I love that. Now, are there tones that you can't hear musically in an instrument?
Well, I don't know. I don't know because I can't. I don't know what I don't hear. Does that make sense to
yeah.
you?
No, I know yeah. what you're saying. I want to ask you a little bit more about your hearing. How old were you when you realized you had a hearing problem?
I was born that way, and I never realized it. I still haven't realized it because I hear what I hear, and that's it. See, if you don't know what you're missing, how can you say what you miss?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There was insistence that that I wear a hearing aid because I would hear so much better. And I put this hearing aid on, and I'm telling you, I thought I was going to go nuts with the clanging and banging that I heard, you know, banging, clack, clack, boom. And you could hear the tires of the car. Blah, 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 blah. I says, oh, my goodness, if people hear this, I mean, it's nerve-wracking. So what I did was I turned it off, and they said, well, isn't that much better? I said, it certainly is. Yeah.
So you've intentionally not worn a hearing aid.
Oh, no. And there's nothing that can be done, like no surgery or anything. So, like, what I do is, like, what did they say, honey? What did they say? Honey, what was that? What was that? My wife, my honey Linda, boy, she tells me, you know, whatever it is, if I feel that I've missed something. You heard that joke, didn't you, Terry, about the guy says, oh, man, he says, boy, I just spent $4,000 on this wonderful hearing aid, you know. And the guy said, yeah. And what kind is it? The guy said, it's 12 o'clock.
It took me a second.
Yeah.
Right. So did music sound different with the hearing aid?
Oh, I wouldn't dare do that. I wouldn't dare put a hearing aid on and play music because just the way I hear it, that's the way I hear it. Because if I put the hearing aid in, then it's banging and clanging again mm-hmm. and clinking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Tell us the story of the band that you played in the Air Force, and this was right after you got out of college.
Well, the band that I played in the Air Force was an unauthorized Air Force band because when I was in the Air Force, it was segregated. So three quarters of the base was Caucasian and one quarter was Negro, and they wanted to have a Negro band, so they formed one. And then Linton Garner, Earl Garner's brother, he was drafted, and he came to the base where we were. And then Pop Reeves, he was drafted, and he wrote some things for Benny Goodman. And I never will forget Linton Garner. One day he asked me, he said, Moody, he said, play your scales for me. So I said, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he said, well? I said, well, what? He said, is that it? I said, yeah. He said, my boy, you're in for a rude awakening. You know, so anyway, but little by little. But, you know, I'd like to say one thing, Terry. When I was in Greensboro, North Carolina, I was 18 years old, right? And I was living in Newark, New Jersey. Do you know that the German prisoners of war used to come into town and jump off the truck, you know, with the PW on their back and those hats, and go into the restaurants and eat, and we couldn't?
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you feel about serving in the Air Force, knowing that your own country wouldn't let you into certain restaurants?
Well, what could you do? You see, because in the first place, like, there was nothing you... After I left and went to Europe and was living in France, I would send my wife, I would send my mother a letter, and I'd have on there, it had the land of the brave, I'd put the land of the au fait, you know, or something, USA, you know. And my mother said, Jim, don't do that. I mean, you're getting in trouble, you know. But, hey, it was the truth, you know, because, like it was their land, you know, not mine.
You joined the Gillespie Big Band after you got out of the Air Force.
Yeah.
And it was a very innovative band. It was one of the first big bands really playing the new music of bebop. What was it like for you to be in this band? What were the most exciting parts of it for you?
Well, the most exciting thing about that band was when I grew older and found out where I was when I first was in that band, because, like I've said before, when I joined the band, Thelonious Monk was the piano player, Ray Brown was the bass player, Milt Jackson was the vibe hoppers, and Kenny Clark, he was the drummer. That was the rhythm section, along with Howard Johnson, Cecil Payne, all the people like that. Now, if I would have known where I was, like, I would have fainted, you see?
Sure.
So I'm glad I was naive. I wasn't that hip, so I didn't know where I was. I mean, I knew, but I didn't. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. And what was Dizzy Gillespie like as a band leader? I think you've called him your musical father.
Oh, yeah. Dizzy was wonderful, man. Then we knew each other and it was all right, you know, but I got to really know him better when I played in the quintet. You know, and musically, he was bad, boy. He was bad. And Diz was always studying, too. Like, he would always, you know, he'd sit down at the piano, look at this, look at that, look at this. And he saw me, he said, Moody, this is where everything is. See the piano? I don't care what the instrument is, that's where it is. Trombone, violin, trumpet, saxophone, flute, this is where it is. You look at it, you see everything. When you play the piano, all the notes are laid out there for you. You know, and all those notes are on every one of the instruments. So Diz said, you want to really know what's happening, you learn the piano. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, that's what he did. Pardon me?
Did you learn it?
Well, I can play the changes, yeah. I can sit down and I can pick out what I have to do. You know, before, I used to have to call a friend, hey, could you play the changes for me so I can hear what they sound like? You know, but I don't have to do that. I can play them myself now.
My guest is saxophonist James Moody. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. It's Jazz Week on Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1996 interview with saxophonist James Moody. Your first solo was recorded with the Dizzy Gillespie Band. The tune is called Eminon, which is no name spelled backwards.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I think, in 1947. Do you remember your solo on that record? Could you sing
it? Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, I remembered it. Because I wasn't supposed to take the solo. The baritone player was supposed to take it, and he didn't show up or something. And the solo was bo do do dee 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 something like that.
And now, how come you remember it? Do you remember it from actually playing it or from listening to the record?
No, because a lot of times when we see each other, like sometimes I'm talking to Jimmy Heath, it's section we call each other because he's a wonderful saxophonist, or some of the guys, and we're talking, somebody says, oh, yeah, man, you remember Eminon when we were Dizzy? Yeah. And we'd all sing it for a moment together, you know.
Now, the most famous solo that you've ever taken was on your first recording of I'm in the Mood for Love. And mm-hmm. then Eddie Jefferson, a singer who was working with you, wrote a lyric to your solo, and uh-huh. that became the song known as Moody's Mood for Love. Let's hear the Eddie Jefferson version of Moody's Mood for Love, his lyric to your solo.
There I go, there I go, there I go, there I go. Pretty baby, you are the soul that snaps my control. Such a funny thing, but every time you're near me, I never can behave. You give me a smile and then I'm wrapped up in your magic. There's music all around me, crazy music, music that keeps calling me so very close to you, turns me your slave. Come and do with me any little thing you want to. Anything, baby, just let me get next to you. Am I insane or do I really see heaven in your eyes? Bright as stars that shine up above there in the clear blue sky. How I worry about you, just can't live my life without you, baby. Come here, don't have no fear. Wonder why
I'm really feeling in the mood for love. And tell me why. Stop to think.
Now, what impact did Moody's Mood for Love have on your career?
Well, if I don't do it to this day, people said I haven't been there. I mean, that goes to show you. Like, no matter how much I practice, if I don't say, there I go, or play, you know, do 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 do, then it's like I haven't been there. But, like, I'm not, it doesn't make me feel like, oh, I don't want to be doing this. But, I mean, I love doing it. And it's been very good to me, that that solo. And I'm honored and privileged, I believe, you know, to be able to do it.
Now, I want to take a pause here and play something that's basically an outtake. But it's such an entertaining outtake. And this is this was something you recorded in 1958. The tune is called The Moody One. And you stopped.
I goofed?
Yeah.
On the record date?
Well, let's play the outtake and hear the goof.
I goofed on the record date, and they left that in there. Yeah, I remember
right.
that.
Here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Were your outtakes usually as entertaining as this one?
Oh, sure. That's like the bloopers, you know. That was my blooper. That was my way of doing it, you know. But anybody, when they do something like that, they always say something that's a little comical, you know.
Were you surprised that this actually ended up on the record?
Well, yeah, because, like, you know, finally they said, yeah, we're going to leave it on there, too. I said, what? Yeah, I said, well, go ahead. I don't care. And then I'd go and play places. The people said, I goofed on the record date.
I want to ask you something else about Dizzy Gillespie.
Uh-huh.
You were very close with Dizzy Gillespie. Were you close
yep.
to him when he died?
Yeah. We were with him. I had him in my arms. There was John Faddis was there.
The trumpeter.
Yeah, Jacques Mouyel and his son, John Motley, and myself. Yeah. There were five of us in there with him when he passed. And you know what's funny? I told John, I said, John, you mark my word, 10 years from now, there are going to be 50 people in the room with this. You know, and there was no music playing. There was nothing. I mean, Diz was just, he was sitting there, but, you know, trying to breathe deep, trying to get his breath. And his eyes were closed, you know. And he never opened them. And finally, he took the last one, man. And that was, you know. So, yep, that was it, man.
Was he conscious toward the end? Did he know that you were there?
Well, the night before, he knew that we were there. The night before, because Mike Longo and myself, we went to see him. And we said, ooh, papa da, you know, ziabadi bambi. And he tried to mouth, ooh, papa da. And then the thing he did was he took his finger and put it up to his lips and tried to make his jaws go out like he usually did. You know how he would do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he was too weak, but we smiled, you know, and all like that. And I said, Mikkel, let's go, man. We'll come back tomorrow. I said that to Mike Longo, you know. And so, you know, then when I went back the next day, like, he was in bed that night. And then when I went back the next day, he was sitting up. They had him in a chair sitting up. And he was, you know, trying to breathe. So, anyway, yeah, but I mean it. I just it's not the same. Nothing is the same anymore without Diz, man. You know.
You must feel like you owe so much of your career to him because he gave you your first job and then you played with him off and on for so long.
Yeah, he did when I was 21 years old. First gig. Yep. Yep. And even now, like I tell people that when they ask me, they said, well, what do you remember of this? You know, I mean, there are many things. And what happened is sometimes I'll say, ah, that's what he meant. You know, it might be because everywhere that I've gone in the world, no matter where it was, I was there first with Diz. Diz took me everywhere first, man. You know, I go to Africa, you know, just Sweden, Germany, France, all except Paris. I went there first alone. But then after that, everywhere else was with Diz. And now when I go to those places and I'm going, boy, I say, oh, man, you know. And for the longest time, I used to call my wife. I used to call Linda, my honey, and tell her, says, honey, I called you and you weren't home. You know, she says, honey, I've been home all day. I said, well, I said, but I called, and then I'd say the number, and she'd say, honey, that's Dizzy's number.
Oh, wow. Yeah. James Moody recorded in 1996. Here he is with Dizzy Gillespie's band. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.